Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, which shares stories of awakening, spiritual communication, healing energies, miracles, and a guide to soul development and soul maturity. Today I welcome Tricia Nelson, author of Heal Your Hunger, which offers 7 steps to understand and end emotional eating. Our physical challenges most especially lead us to our spiritual talents and gifts, and also offer ways to master our physical and energetic emotional needs. Hello, Tricia, and thank you for joining us on Healing From Within.
It is such a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Cheryl.
Tricia, as listeners of Healing From Within have come to know, that by listening to the intimate experiences and insights of my guests, there is a way to understand and to utilize events, no matter how challenging, and to explore the experience to lead us to a better outcome and improve life, enjoy it more, and find peace and contentment in the moment. It is possible and probable with the right attitude and tools to heal on a physical, emotional, and spiritual level. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Tricia Nelson, who lost 50 pounds by first identifying and healing the root causes of her emotional eating, and has spent over 30 years researching the hidden causes of the addictive personality, and food addiction is one of the toughest addictions and is symptomatic of deeper issues. In 25 years of helping Americans upgrade their diets, Tricia has seen how many misconceptions there are and how overweight individuals harm their physical and emotional state of being, often causing more pain, loneliness, and self-sabotaging views that limit their perception and potential to thrive. Trish, I always love to ask my guests, because I get the most amazing answers, to think back to their childhood and remember a person, place, event, or interest that may have provided a clue to the work and lifestyle they would focus on as an adult, because I personally believe we are born with certain issues that we wish to explore and learn on an inner soul level, and it begins very early for the adults.
No question about it.
Yeah. So think back for a minute.
It's a great question. I, in high school, had a really neat experience. I was president of my class in my junior year in high school, and then I was president of my school my senior year. And I wasn't much for academics. I wasn't very into studying. I got by. I got okay grades, but I didn't really enjoy it. It wasn't what I wanted to do. And what I ended up doing, because I had this, you know, slight position of authority on campus, I started a lot of different fun initiatives in my school. Like, I noticed that people were, doing sort of degenerative things on the weekends, like drinking and doing drugs. And I thought, well, let's create some entertainment that really make things fun. And I would organize ski trips up to the mountains, and I'd organize different things. And I went to a private school, and we were there all the time, all year, 7 days a week we were at school. And so at night, I created these fundraisers where we would sell things and make money for our class. And I did a lot of fun things. I did this whole thing around Valentine's Day, this messengers of love, and I got a whole shipment of carnations where we could each secretly give something to somebody else and have it delivered. So a lot of fun, creative things. And, you know, I did all that just because I needed the outlet, and I didn't like school, and I didn't like sports, which they made us do sports as well. And, you know, I was fat. I was an emotional eater, and I was 50 pounds overweight by the time I was 21 years old. So I didn't like sports. I didn't like running the way they made me run. So I did these creative outlet, you know, things that were really fun, and they enhanced people's lives. Like, they enhanced people's lives, and I would spend a lot of time on the phone and sort of organizing and doing these projects. But when I look back, Cheryl, at when I see now my life and the way it is, and the programs that I create for emotional eaters to put an end to emotional eating, and I'm having a retreat this weekend, a Heal Your Hunger retreat at my home, I see the beginnings of that sort of project-oriented life where I just wanted to make life better for other people. And I, of course, wasn't doing it around emotional eating at the time, but I definitely see the seeds of what has become just a really satisfying work life.
That was your destiny. You were born with that desire to improve the condition of your own life and other people. And you also said, I've read your book, you had a lot of fear. And even though you came from a good home, went to a private school, right, and traveled, you liked Maine.
Yep.
I like Maine, too. I've been there many times. But you said inside where you lived, you were hurting. And now, of course, this wasn't always on a conscious level, but under that happy facade, you were burying something that was a hurtful experience that you have. And many people who have addictions, who have pain, do have things that have not surfaced and that are causing, whether it's eating or drinking or drugs, whatever it is, they are trying to go from a place of pain to a place of well-being and happiness. And would you like to tell us about what you were hiding?
Absolutely. Yeah, no question about it. So even though I was having fun doing those creative things, I was definitely suffering on another level because I was fat and I hated being fat. I hated this big roll I had on my tummy, and I would scrunch it up and want to slice it off, and I would imagine getting some terrible disease which would make me automatically lose weight without my trying, and these very, very strong violent thoughts about my own body because I was just so out of control, and there's nothing I could do about it. I couldn't diet for any length of time. I couldn't exercise. As I said, I hated to exercise. So I was carrying a lot of pain. And what I've discovered in my 30 years of helping people with eating, disordered eating and emotional eating, is that there's three main drivers of emotional eating, and this is certainly the case for me. And I call it the PEP test. And PEP is an acronym, and the first P stands for painkiller. So I was using excess food as a painkiller, not just excess food, but all the ooey gooey chewy foods. I was using those foods really to anesthetize pain, both childhood pain and just pain that I created in my life. Chaotic relationships or guilt or different things that I would do that I didn't feel good about. I wanted to anesthetize that pain, and food was an amazing way to do it. That's why I liked carbs. I wasn't binging on salad. I was binging on things that would really kill the pain, and so that was one thing. And the E in the PEP test stands for escape. So I was wanting to escape. I hated feeling uncomfortable feelings, and at all costs, I would want to escape those feelings. And again, there's no real better way than to get your favorite foods, the ice cream and the brownies and the cookies, and sit in front of the TV now we have bingeable TV shows, and just check out. I just wanted to check out, and that was really on account of fear. You had mentioned earlier from my book, I talked a lot about fear, and I did. Even though I had a good childhood, even though there was no real problem in my life, ostensibly, I had tremendous fear. I was a worrywart, and I had a racing, mind, and I awfulized about the worst case scenario all the time. And so, I wanted to escape my head and what was going on between my ears. And the last P in the PEP test stands for punishment. And this is something a lot of people don't realize, is that emotional eaters and addicts in general, and this PEP test stands really can work for all addictions, but I was punishing myself with food, and I did with alcohol as well. I was really beating myself up with that food and not realizing it, because I thought of it as a reward, but I'd always go too far. I'd always eat too much. I'd feel stuffed and sick, and then I do these drastic things to try to get rid of, the calories that I ate. So that's really on account of guilt. I mean, I was talking about the PEP test because those are the three driving emotions, the pain, the fear, and the guilt.
But it wasn't you who were guilty. It was whoever perpetrated that on you. But I know you felt maybe you were part of it or had shame or whatever, and there was no one to talk about. Did you eventually talk to someone about it?
Well, anybody who experiences sexual abuse usually does feel some sort of kind of guilt because, especially if you're young and you do wonder if you caused it. And then I will say that it's very typical for people who have had sexual abuse, perpetrated on them. It's very typical for them to then have a sexual compulsion that stems
Yes.
from that, which I did. I was a compulsive masturbator after that and had tremendous guilt. That was a big dark secret on top of the sexual abuse that I experienced. So, there's no question that that plays a part in it, and it is an incredibly staining experience for anyone who experiences it. And I did. It's very typical for people who have sexual abuse to gain weight and use
Yes.
food, to cover that up. And no question about it, that's where I went with it. We gain weight so we feel unattractive, so we shut down our sexuality, and then it's like we're out of commission, but we're not really, because we have that sex obsession even still. Anything we try to tamp down, it's what, the reason why the priests were so, just did what they did, is because they were told that, they shouldn't be sexual, and there, lo and behold, they're acting out every which way. So, I certainly, for myself, when we think our sexuality is bad, we end up, being promiscuous or being, obviously, inappropriate in different ways, and a lot, so many people experience that. So that had a huge part of the torture I had mentally and emotionally and spiritually, that I was using food to anesthetize.
Yeah, and you wrote, I know now that these distractions were in themselves addictions, and the real issues were within me, not the outside world. Right.
Yeah.
So let's go on to 99% of all diets fail. Why do you think that is?
Well, it's so funny. It gets overlooked all the time. I mean, everybody, it seems to, any dieter has heard that, statistic. And yet they'll continue to diet. It's like we get seduced into thinking it's going to work this time. Like 99 out of 100 times it doesn't work, but this time it'll work. And it's just because of the desperation of feeling like we need to lose weight and we don't want to be in this body anymore. And yet people keep trying something that's broken and doesn't work. And the reason is, and from my experience, is because of emotional eating. So people are trying to go on a diet, control their food, weigh and measure what they eat, do this, the exercise program. They do everything but deal with really how they got overweight in the first place, which is from out of control eating. And if that's not addressed, sure, we can all diet, for 1 week or 2 weeks, but we'll always bust out and end up overeating again. And that's because we do have these underlying emotions that aren't addressed, and if you take, I mean, just sort of think about it. If you take a cancer patient in the hospital, they have a cancer and they have pain, and so they're given morphine at in the hospital, and maybe they're even given a little clicker where they can control the amount of morphine they have if they're not out of it. But they use that morphine to control the pain, but you don't consider that they have a morphine problem. They have a cancer problem,
Yes.
and yet, when we diet, we're doing the same thing. We're treating the morphine and not the cancer. How did
Absolutely.
we How do we get there in the first place? That's what needs to be addressed. And that's so overlooked because we just get seduced by this idea of, oh, losing weight, fitting to my genes, no matter what the statistics are, no matter what our own experience. I mean, people for decades have been dieting, and yet they'll try yet another diet. It's like that quick fix mentality that
Right.
really doesn't fix anything.
It doesn't work. Now, you give some wonderful facts in the book, and let's give it to our listeners. Close to 70% of American adults are either overweight or obese. That's 7 out of 10 people. And each year, about 45 million people in this country go on a diet. U.S. consumers spend $109 million every day on diet and weight loss products. Annually, weight loss is a 60 billion-dollar industry. And right now on Amazon, there are 65,000 weight loss books and 365,000 fitness books, and yet 98% of all diets fail. Now, the truth is, what you're saying here in your book hits on the reason that people all over our country are struggling with drugs and alcohol and sex abuse, and they have pain. pain from their earliest childhood remembrances, lack of love, lack of someone just supporting them for who they were, and having expectations very often that are not appropriate for the age level or for the lifestyle, or not appropriate because it's coming from someone else, and a person has to find what makes them tick and what brings them happiness and joy. So this goes not only for eating disorders, this goes for many of the other addictions that we're talking about right now. And you also say you should be reading this book not only if you're overweight and have issues with food or weight, but if you grapple with other, you know, you give binge eating and other issues, that you should be reading this book if you have. So can you tell us something about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a really tough situation. I mean, people lose control of food, you know. I mean, it's a sad thing, but it's, you know, I consider really, Cheryl, that we're all on the spectrum. Like, you know, it's
absolutely.
So easy to have
that's
right?
The truth. There's no one on this planet who is not dealing with a soul and spiritual issue that causes problems in the physical world. But what I was getting at there was, you mentioned if you've ever grappled with binge eating, restricting, purging, regurgitation, constant dieting, food obsession, or exercise fanaticism, any of those things, it's all symptomatic of other problems, and we've got to get to that. So what is emotional eating?
So emotional eating, a lot of people think of is just, you know, eating too much. You know, a lot of people, you know, because I say I'm an emotional eating expert, people come to me and tell me their story, and I'll oftentimes have somebody say, oh, I don't binge, so I'm obviously not an emotional eater. But that's really not necessarily true. You know, some people emotionally, they don't binge at all. You know, they may not even overeat, and yet if they're choosing, you know, heavy, dense, high-calorie foods, like they prefer potatoes over broccoli or bananas over, you know, berries, they're looking for starchier, heavier, more sugar-laden foods. That's for emotional reasons. So they don't have to be a binger in order to be an emotional eater, in order to depend on food for emotional reasons. And even an under-eater, somebody who is anorexic or not totally anorexic, but at least very restrictive and controlling with their food, that person's doing that for emotional reasons. They're emotionally eating, you know, however much or how little they eat, it's driven by their emotions. And so it's really important for people to know that really we're all emotional eaters. I mean,
yes.
I think God made us to like food, you know, in an emotional way, because that way we would subsist as a planet, but it really depends on how far you go. So like I said, it's really a spectrum, and on the high end of the spectrum is food addiction, like all out. And that was me. I mean, I could pack away 5,000 calories in a sitting, and then I'd feel disgusting, you know, and gain 5 pounds. But that's me. I was a food addict. Not everybody gets that far out of control.
No.
They can pull it back and exercise, but it's just where you are on the spectrum.
But you put it another way. Emotional eating is using food to meet needs beyond physical nourishment. And these needs are social needs, emotional needs, mental needs, and spiritual needs.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
We have to address all these mental needs. If you've got an overactive or racing mind or have fear, emotional needs. If you use food for comfort and companionship, social needs, maybe feeling lonely and not knowing how to make changes in your life, and spiritual needs. We all have a deep craving for meaning, for an understanding of our greater purpose, and a feeling of oneness. So there's a great deal going on when we're dealing with people who want to understand food, how to use food in a healthy way, and how to live a healthier life. So let's go on. You met someone who was very helpful to you, and his name is Roy Nelson. So do you want to tell us something about what you learned from him and how that helped you tremendously?
You bet. I was, you know, I was doing everything I could to try to lose weight. I did diets, I did lotions and potions and pills and 12-step programs and eating disorders therapy. I did a lot of different things. But I didn't get, I didn't lose the weight. I just kept yo-yoing with my weight. But what I learned from Roy is he's a spiritual healer, and he really taught me that my problem has nothing to do with food. That food was the symptom. And that was music to my ears because I think I knew it in my heart, but everybody's always trying to put you on a diet or trying to
Yeah.
get you to control your food. And so I just kept doing
Well,
that and
that's
really
what the
like.
doctors do and the exercise therapist and the physical therapist, right? They go that route. But what you had to be told was the truth. And it was that simple. And you have a 3-meal magic plan. That's very important and one of the best things in the book. And I agree wholeheartedly that if people can start to have a practical way to approach this and also reach deep within themselves, even if they need therapy to do it, because we can't do all these things alone, or energy therapies like what I do Reiki energy healing. There's, of course, cranial sacral. There are many different energy modalities that can help a person get in touch with their inner being and find out what's really causing the problems. So I agree that this approach that you give, the 3-meal magic plan, is a magical plan. It's simple and it's really good. So you want to tell us something about that?
You bet. It's not a diet, and I think what's so important
No,
that
it's
people
not a
know is
diet.
that what this is a tool to help somebody access their emotions. You see, we're never going to know why we're eating unless we stop overeating. So this is to facilitate really getting more in touch with one's emotions. And what 3-meal magic is, it's eating 3 meals with nothing in between, which is surprisingly hard for an emotional eater because we're used to snacking and grazing throughout the day. We're into seafood. We see it and we eat it, And so this is a way for somebody to have some boundaries around their food and literally just eat 3 meals, and they have to be healthy meals, otherwise you're going to get hungry and are going to want to eat between the meals, but not overeat. And what happens is, Cheryl, it's the best way to really know whether somebody is physically hungry or emotionally hungry, because emotional hunger can really mask itself as physical hunger. And to this day, I mean, I'm 30 years into doing this work with people, I still get fooled by it. Like sometimes it'll be 10 o'clock in the morning, and then I'll feel like, oh, I'm so hungry. What can I eat? And then I have to have this little conversation with myself. And I'm not, like, Tricia, you had breakfast just a couple hours ago. You're probably not as starving as you think you are. And
Right. And
that's
then
why 3-meal
maybe you
magic is
drink
so
water
good.
then. Maybe then you just have a
Yes.
nice glass of water.
And that's actually true, is thirst can mask itself as hunger as well. But what's really important to know is 3-meal magic will help inform us about whether it's physical or emotional. And if I've had breakfast 2 hours before, I can pretty much reason with myself that I'm not as hungry as I think I am, and that way I can start like doing a little digging, like, okay, what's going on then? Like, because this must be emotional, because I am actually quite well fed, and that way I can start looking at what emotions are going on. And usually there's something I'm trying to avoid, like there's some emotion I don't want to feel. And so that structure of the 3 meals helps me know in between my meals that something's going on, and then I can start digging into what that is. But if I'm eating all throughout the day, I'm pretty much not feeling anything, and then I can't ever get to what it is that's driving my eating.
Absolutely. All right, you also said, and I want all listeners to hear this, very important. Emotional eaters have a living problem. Not an eating problem. If that can
So
sink
true.
in, and life is very challenging right now in this time and place, and we're all
Right.
evolving spiritually, and that's why I believe so many of these problems are bubbling up to the surface, right? So, what would you most like people to take away with them after reading your book, Heal Your Hunger?
Well, I think it's just to really remember it's not about the food, and it can seem like the food, I totally get that, but it really isn't about the food. And if you can look deeper, as to what it really is, and like you said, nobody can do this alone. And
No.
I totally believe that. And one of the steps in my book is connection and community. And I really think it's important for people to have a connection with other emotional eaters who are on this path. That's why I have my own, Facebook group for people who, it's called the HYH community, but for people who are trying to heal heal from this. You know, there's such a sense of loneliness and isolation when people are emotional eaters. You know, we do crazy things with food. I mean, I used to eat out of the garbage where I'd binge, and then I'd get so full I'd throw the rest of my food out, and then I'd go pass out in front of the TV, and then a couple hours later I'd be hungry. I'd have a little bit of room left in my tummy, and I'd go dig that food out that I'd thrown out. Well, I felt so awful and embarrassed and ashamed of that behavior, and I thought I was the only one. Sure.
No, absolutely not.
Right?
And you know what? Many emotional eaters are sensitives. They're people with great psychic and spiritual ability. They're empaths.
So
they have gifts, but they don't, as a young person, have the tools. And so, like you said, some won't eat because they have anxiety. Some eat too much to quiet the anxiety. And they are not getting from their teachers and parents and the adults and you know, authority figures in their life or what they really need to understand themselves and to thrive. So I want to thank you, Tricia Nelson, author of Heal Your Hunger, for sharing your own journey of addiction to the freedom of seeing and enjoying food in a healthy, joyful, practical way to sustain your best way of life, joy, and contentment, rather than feeding the fears, traumas, and limitations of any past events. To purchase this book, go to healyourhunger.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, Tricia Nelson has shown us through her own journey with exploring her inner life and events of childhood, how she was able to discover her reasons for emotional eating, and how she was guided to find a way to feel more comfortable with herself, life, and create an environment of acceptance rather than fear, doubt, denial, and pain. Emotional eating is the way the soul forces food down to hide or disguise the real issues that our subconscious has not been willing to face. And it is only by awareness, acceptance, and surrendering to the beautiful aspects of ourself and life itself that we can begin to feel at peace and find love of life, of self, and of others. All addictions are, as we know and talked about today, based on trauma or fear. And the same inner discontent or fear of surviving in a world that often judges and limits ourselves from exploring our true nature as souls having a physical life. Tricia wrote, "Emotional eaters are typically afraid of feelings. When we don't have food in our belly, we tend to be more sensitive and more aware of what's going on inside. We're more aware of sadness, loneliness, fear, anger, dread, and other hard-to-manage feelings. Even happy, joyful feelings, which strangely are sometimes harder to face than the dark ones, can be overwhelming, especially when we don't feel worthy of feeling good. To be free of emotional eating, you must address the hidden problems that cause it, the underlying pain that you use food to numb, the fears that make you want to escape, and the guilt you harbor inside that makes you believe you deserve to be punished. Tricia and I would have you employ the tools of self-awareness, self-care, and self-love to begin to empower your life and find your way past any addiction to feelings of well-being and delight with the world as it is and as you are, and find that all is right for self-discovery, self-actualization, and the realization that life is a gift to be enjoyed and live to the best of our ability. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of The Living Spirit, and invite you to visit my website to read about and listen to leaders in the metaphysical, health, educational, spiritual, scientific, and medical fields offer their insights into living well past the challenges of a physical world reality. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you.